Hare Krishna, everyone. Thank you to Lekha Shravanti for the invite and all the devotees for coming. I'll try my best to share something with you today on the wonderful Bhagavad Gita. Omagyana timiranthasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshuran militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya mano bhishtam stapitam yena bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalan Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Rapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishvabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunita Ananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So maybe what I'll do is I'll just share my screen with you. I don't know, maybe those on computers will be able to see. I'm just going to share the verse and then I'll read the verse. For those of you maybe who are in the temple, you can bring the verse up on your phone maybe. We're reading today from Bhagavad Gita, text number 4 from the 4th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So this is the chapter entitled Transcendental Knowledge. Yeah, so chapter number 4, text number 4. I'll read the Sanskrit, English, and purport, and then we can continue. Arjuna uvacha aparam bhavato janma param janma vivashvatah Katham etad vijaniyam tvam ado prabhavaniti. Translation. Arjuna said, the sun god Vivashvan is senior by birth to you. How am I to understand that in the beginning you instructed this science to him? Purport. Maybe just to give some context to the verse, Krishna began the chapter by talking about how this knowledge that he's giving to Arjuna, Krishna said, I gave it like many, many years ago already. I gave it to the sun god. Arjuna is looking at Krishna and he's saying, you're saying thousands and thousands of years ago, you gave the knowledge to the sun god, but you don't look that old. You look pretty young. So how is it that Vivashvan is so much older than you, many, many thousands of years before you, yet you gave the knowledge to him? How is that possible? Logically, it doesn't make any sense. So this is Arjuna's confusion. Purport. Arjuna is accepted as a devotee of the Lord, so how could he not believe Krishna's words? The fact that Arjuna is not inquiring for himself, but for those who do not believe in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or for the demons who do not like the idea that Krishna should be accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for them only Arjuna inquires on this point as if he himself were not aware of the Personality of Godhead or Krishna. As it will be evident from the 10th chapter, Arjuna knew perfectly well that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the fountainhead of everything and the last word in transcendence. Of course, Krishna also appeared as the son of Devaki on earth. How Krishna remained the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, the eternal original person, is very difficult for an ordinary person ordinary man to understand. Therefore, to clarify this point, Arjun put this question before Krishna so that he himself could speak authoritatively. That Krishna is the supreme authority is accepted by the whole world, not only at present, but from time immemorial, and the demons alone reject him. Anyway, since Krishna is the authority accepted by all, Arjun put this question before him in order that Krishna would describe himself without being depicted by the demons, who always try to distort him in a way understandable to the demons and their followers. It is necessary that everyone for his own interest know the science of Krishna. Therefore, when Krishna himself speaks about himself, it is auspicious for all the worlds. To the demons, such explanations by Krishna himself may appear to be strange, because the demons always study Krishna from their own standpoint. But those who are devotees heartily welcome the statements of Krishna when they are spoken by Krishna himself. The devotees will always worship such authoritative statements of Krishna because they are always eager to know more and more about him. The atheists who consider Krishna an ordinary man may in this way come to know that Krishna is superhuman, that he is Sachit Ananda Vigraha, the eternal form of bliss and knowledge, that he is transcendental, and that he is above the domination of the modes of material nature and above the influence of time and space. A devotee of Krishna like Arjun is undoubtedly above any misunderstanding of the transcendental position of Krishna. Arjun putting this question before the Lord is simply an attempt by the devotee to defy the atheistic attitude of persons who consider Krishna to be an ordinary human being subject to the modes of material nature. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So here Krishna is demystifying Arjun's confusion. Arjun is saying, like, Vivashvan is way older than you. How could you have instructed him? And Krishna then in the next verse explains that I've had many, many births before. And the difference between me and you is that I know about all of those births because I don't take birth by the force of Maya. I appear in this world periodically to give knowledge. Therefore, later on in this chapter, Krishna will say, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. Krishna says, I come many times. I've come many times before, and I'll continue to come many times to give this knowledge. And in this way, Krishna is explaining that me and you, Arjun, me and the living entity, we're completely different. You should never try to equate us. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is explaining that the problem of the demons is that they try to equate the living entity and Krishna. Yeah, this is the basic difficulty that atheists are experiencing. I'm just going to share something with you on the screen. Maybe some of you will be able to see it, but those of you who can't see it, you'll get the gist of it. If you imagine Krishna is up here, he's like transcendental. He's above everyone. He's like, he's Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam. He's the one maintaining everyone. And the living entity is here. Okay? So Krishna is clearly above the living entity. That's a clear philosophical statement. However, atheists, and specifically what we call philosophical atheists who try to philosophically conjecture that Krishna is just an ordinary person. What do? They try to bring Krishna down to the level of the living entity. So Krishna is up here, the living entity is here. And what the philosophical atheist does is they bring Krishna down and say, Krishna and us, we're the same. Krishna is just like, yeah, he can play the flute really well, but he's basically just like us. There's no difference. And that's called a philosophical atheist. Yeah. So I'm just going to write here. Philosophical atheist. Did you know there's another type of atheist that Prabhupada often talked about, called a covered atheist? Anyone know who Prabhupada referred to as covered atheists? I don't know. If there's someone in the ISKCON Berlin or ISKCON Oslo, you can unmute yourself and shout out. Does anyone know who Prabhupada called covered atheists? Anyone know? Okay, maybe you do, but it's too far to get to the unmute button to unmute yourselves. All right, so don't worry, we'll skip the interactive. Okay, Sanatani, are you going to answer? No, you're not. Okay. Prabhupada said impersonalists were covered atheists. Did you ever think, or how can an impersonalist be an atheist? They're a different category, right? But if you think about it, what do impersonalists do? They go the other way. So the philosophical atheist brings Krishna down and makes Krishna and the living entity the same. That's atheism. But when you try to take the living entity up and say, I am Krishna, Tattvam Asi, I am also that spirit, that's called a covered atheist. So Srila Prabhupada often spoke out against impersonalists as much as he did about atheists, because he says basically the philosophy of atheism and impersonalism is basically, in one sense, very, very similar. Because what they're both doing is removing the distinction between us and Krishna. There's also another type of atheist. So this is like the first type of atheist. This is the second type of atheist. Did you know that there's another type of atheist called a psychological atheist? And a psychological atheist is a person who accepts the living entities here, who accepts Krishna as the supreme, and philosophically accepts that we are servants of God, but in their life act in such a way that they're constantly trying to take Krishna out of the picture. And many of us, if we're honest, then we may have to admit to being psychological atheists in many parts of the day. Because there are many times when, although we wear the dress of a devotee, we take on the identity of being a devotee, we are actually in many ways in our life trying to take Krishna out of the picture. So a third type of atheist is a psychological atheist. There is another type of atheist, actually, who in one sense, they know that Krishna is the supreme and that the living entities are servants. Yet they're also considered atheists. You know who they are? Some of you may know. They are called transcendental atheists. Have you ever met a transcendental atheist? You may not have, because to meet a transcendental atheist, you have to go to the divine land of Vrindavan. Because in Vrindavan, although the devotees, in one sense, they do know that Krishna is God, they become so overwhelmed by the sweetness of love for Krishna that they look at Krishna and they say, no, no, he's my son. No, no, he's my friend. No, no, he's my boyfriend. In that way, there are also transcendental atheists. So in this, throughout Srila Prabhupada's books, Srila Prabhupada constantly talks about different individuals who are not fully aware of Krishna's position and our position. And in this purport specifically, Prabhupada is talking about the atheist, the basic type of atheist that we meet, who is not aware of Krishna's position. So it's very important for us to understand Krishna's position, because when we understand Krishna's position, then we can fully give ourselves in service to Krishna. You see, first, there are Vedic teachings, there are two things, tattva and rasa. Tattva means to understand truth, and rasa means to experience relationship. However, in order to fully experience the relationship with Krishna, first one has to understand the tattva or the identity of Krishna. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada said, don't try and read the 10th canto of Bhagavatam immediately, because the 10th canto of Bhagavatam is known as Rasam Alayam, which means the abode of rasa. In the 10th canto, you hear about all these amazing relationships with Krishna. But if you haven't first understood the tattva of Krishna, the truth of Krishna, his identity, if you've not understood that, then you may misunderstand the rasa. And so it's very, very important for us to understand Krishna's position. And therefore, this chapter of the Gita is really, really important, because this chapter of the Gita is all about knowledge. Knowledge is so important in spiritual life, okay? Like in this chapter, Krishna will explain where does knowledge come from, first of all? So therefore, in the first verse of this chapter, Krishna says, Imam vivashvade yogam proktavan aham avyayam. In the beginning, I gave the knowledge, Krishna said. So where does knowledge come from? First question, it comes from Krishna. Second question, how does that knowledge then get passed down from Krishna through the ages? Then in the second verse, Krishna says, Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo vidu sakale neha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. Knowledge comes from me. And how is that knowledge perpetuated in society, generation after generation? Evam parampara, through parampara, which means a disciplic succession of teachers. Third thing Krishna says, knowledge comes from me. Knowledge is passed down through parampara. Who can understand that knowledge? What is the entrance qualification into the parampara if you want to understand the knowledge? Therefore, Krishna says then in the third verse, Sa evaya maya devya yoga prota puratana bhaktosi me sakha cheti rahasyam yetadutamam. You have to be a bhakta and a sakha. You have to be a devotee and you have to be friendly, non-envious towards Krishna. If you have these qualities, then you'll be able to understand the knowledge. So Krishna explains where the knowledge comes from, how the knowledge is passed down, what qualification you have to have in order to understand the knowledge. In this chapter, Krishna also explains what's the process. If you want to get this knowledge, what's the process for us here and now? Therefore, Krishna says at the end of the chapter, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshantite jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshina. If you want to know this knowledge, then you have to go to a tattvadarshi. Tattva, I already explained, means truth, and darshi means one who sees. So a tattvadarshi literally means someone who's seen the truth. So you have to go to them and you have to inquire and you have to serve and then you have to hear from them like that. And Krishna explains that if you do all of these things and you get the knowledge, what's the result? Tasmad ajnana sambhutam ritstam jnana sinatmana chitvenam shamshayam yogam atisto tista bharata. Krishna says if you get this knowledge in this way, then the result will be all the doubts in your heart will be cut immediately. And you'll have no more doubts. And so in this is an amazing chapter of the Gita, because Krishna gives every part of transcendental knowledge and how to receive it. So knowledge is really, really important in our life. And of course, here Krishna is saying, I've given the knowledge to Vivashvan before. Let me just share one other thing with you. Um, You can see this, right? You can see my screen, right? Lekha Shravanti, you can see my screen, right? Yeah. Okay, so I'm just going to show you one other thing here. Now, sometimes people ask the question, if Krishna gave the knowledge to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, where is Arjuna's name in the disciplic succession? Why is Arjuna's name not there? Has anyone ever asked you that question? So here in the Bhagavad Gita, this page right here, if you can see it, this is at the end of the introduction in the Gita. Srila Prabhupada gives the disciplic succession, how the knowledge comes down and all the names of the different teachers through which that knowledge was passed so that we get it today. But when you look at all of these teachers, then you find that there's no mention of Arjuna here. So Krishna says in the Gita that I gave this knowledge and now I'm giving it to Arjuna to reestablish the parampara. But Arjuna's name doesn't appear here. So sometimes people question, why isn't Arjuna in the parampara? So I just want to clear up this sometimes confusion that is there, that there are two types of parampara. I don't know if you're all aware of this. There is a seminal line and there is a spiritual line. Okay? Knowledge of Krishna comes down in the world through two different types of parampara. One is a seminal line. A seminal line means a genealogical line from parents to children, who then become parents who pass it to their children, family to family, generation after generation. And a spiritual line is when the knowledge comes from guru to disciple. The disciple becomes a guru and then he gives it to his disciple, like that. So there are two types of parampara. It's very important to know this. The seminal line, knowledge is passed through what you call Raja Rishis. Raja means king and Rishi means saintly. So Krishna is saying, in the beginning, I gave this knowledge to Vivashvan. Vivashvan gave it to Manu, and Manu gave it to Ikshvaku. So all of these people, Vivashvan, Manu, Ikshvaku, these are all Raja Rishis. So Krishna is saying, in the beginning, I started this line of knowledge through the Raja Rishis. But later on, it became lost. And so Arjuna, I'm giving the knowledge back to you to establish the seminal line, so that Arjuna will give it to his sons. Like Arjuna's son is Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu's son is Parikshit. Parikshit's son is Janamajaya. And like that, the knowledge would come down. And the spiritual line is when the knowledge is passed through saints. So when you look at the parampara at the end of the introduction to the Gita, which line of parampara is this? This is the spiritual line. So Krishna in the beginning of time gave the knowledge to Brahma, who gave it to Narad, who gave it to Vyas, and like this, it was passed down through teachers, and ultimately is coming to Srila Prabhupada, and then Srila Prabhupada passed on that knowledge to all of his followers. So the current status of these two paramparas is that the seminal parampara is very, very weak. Practically, it's non-existent now. Krishna came and he re-established the knowledge to Arjuna in the seminal line. But over the last 5,000 years, the line of knowledge coming from that parampara has practically disappeared. But the spiritual line is still strong. And therefore, we're very fortunate that we're connected to the spiritual line of parampara, which comes from Krishna to Brahma through Lord Chaitanya and the Goswamis, through the Acharyas, Srila Prabhupada, and our own spiritual masters like that. So that was just something in case some of you are wondering, why is it that Arjuna's name doesn't appear in the parampara? Okay, I could speak more, but maybe I'm just going to stop there and see whether anyone has any questions so far. If someone has any questions, they can ask. Otherwise, let's carry on. Yes, is that a question, Mr. Krishna? Is it? Oh, is it Mataji? Yes, Mataji, please.
Excuse me, please accept my humble obeisances, Prabhu, organizer Srila Prabhupada. I didn't understand the transcendental at ease, but my English is not so good. Maybe the reason is
the English. Oh, okay, yeah, sure. No, so like, for example, the gopis in Vrindavan. The gopis in Vrindavan, although in one sense they know Krishna is God, because if you look at when they're singing songs of Krishna, they're glorifying Krishna as God. But when they see Krishna, they're so overcome by his sweetness, by his charm, by his beauty, their mind is so captured by his personality that they forget he's God. And therefore, sometimes they chastise him. And sometimes they say, Krishna, you're a cheat. And sometimes they say, Krishna, don't ever come back and see us again. We don't want to see you again. And they sometimes criticize Krishna and they say so many different things. So this means transcendental atheist. This is a very transcendental type of atheism in which they've become so much overcome by yoga maya. You understand? Yoga maya is Krishna's energy which covers the devotee from understanding Krishna's God so that they can have loving pastimes. So this is very unique type of atheist. Maybe there are not so many transcendental atheists in Berlin or London. Maybe you have to go back to a spiritual world to find them. But they do exist as well. Yeah. So I was just explaining different types of atheists. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Does that help? Yeah. Thank you very much. Can I ask a second question?
Yeah, sure.
Do you know Eckhart Tolle? This
Eckhart Tolle, the power of now.
Yes, the power of now. And my life partner and some other people in my area, they like Eckhart Tolle very much. Is Eckhart Tolle one of these atheist type? I don't know. He seemed a little. He talks about God, but he seems a little bit unpersonalism. How can I deal with as a Krishna devotee with Eckhart Tolle fans?
To be honest, I don't know exactly what Eckhart Tolle's philosophy is. Of course, his power of now, like the concept of the power of now is not a bad concept. Like, for example, Krishna in the Gita, in the 18th chapter, Krishna says, Brahma Bhuta Prashanatma Nasochati Nakangshati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Madhabhaktim Labhate Param. So in the 18th chapter, Krishna already talks about the power of now. Because you know what Krishna says? Brahma Bhuta, when you get to the level of Brahman, like spiritual realization, na sochiti, na kangshati. So Krishna says, when you get to the level of spiritual realization, na sochiti means you don't worry about the past. Na kangshati, neither do you hanker for the future. In other words, someone who's spiritually realized, they don't worry about the past, they don't hanker for the future, they're totally in the present. They're experiencing the power of now. So what Eckhart Tolle has talked about, actually Krishna has already talked about it in the Gita. Now, with people who are tending towards impersonalism, as I said, even impersonalism is a type of covered atheism. That's how Prabhupada talked about it, because there's no relationship with God. So how to encourage them, how to bring them closer to a personal conception. Of course, our ways of bringing people closer to Krishna, we do it in different ways. If they're open, we can discuss philosophy. So to impersonalists, we can explain that actually, what we're really hankering for in life is relationship. But with impersonalists, often what's happened is because they've had so many bad experiences of relationships in this world, Prabhupada says that therefore they've concluded that in the ultimate spiritual realm, there's no relationship. It's only oneness. Because whenever people get together and there's relationship, there's always difficulty. Therefore, they become impersonalists. So one way to bring impersonalists closer is through philosophy. Another way to bring impersonalists closer to Krishna is just through practice. Like, for example, encouraging them to chant Krishna's names and experience kirtan. And through that power of the holy name, Krishna begins to manifest in their life. And if philosophy doesn't work, and if practice of the holy name doesn't work, then prasadam is the ultimately the fallback option by which we, by prasadam, one's senses are becoming more refined. And therefore, then one may come to the point where one is able to perceive these higher truths of the Supreme Lord. So we have to use different techniques. Hare Krishna. Yes, Sanatani.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
I first have a short comment about Eckhart Tolle, because before I met devotees, I was really, I read all his books. I was very inspired by him. But it was one lecture he gave where he said that he reads Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then I thought, why would I listen to him that's speaking about the Gita wisdom instead of just reading Gita? So he actually inspired me to read Bhagavad Gita. So, So I was wondering, I don't remember if you, of those four, which are atheists, which category would you put those, or would you put those who worship demigods in one category? And also, what about Buddhists? Because Buddhists don't like to hear that they're atheists. So, but they are impersonalists. But which category for the demigods?
Let's start with Buddhists. Buddhists also. We need to come up with another name for them, because, like, the atheist. Remember, I had that diagram. So Krishna's here. The living entity is here, right? So the philosophical atheist brings Krishna down. Okay. So then the same here. The covered atheists bring the living entity up. So the same here, atheism. And I guess what the Buddhists are trying to do, they're trying to disappear both, you know, like just make them vanish, you know, shunyavad, nihilism, nothingness. That ultimately after we die is complete voidism. So that's another way to remove the distinction. One is by leveling it. And another way is just by throwing it totally out of the picture and saying that it's all illusion. And ultimately, none of us exist, neither us, nor Krishna, nor anyone. It's just ultimately is nothingness. So I guess that would be a separate category. And demigod worshippers, they are kind of like compromised theists. So like they, to some extent, accept that we are here and the gods are here. So therefore they worship the gods, but their understanding of who God is and what the hierarchy of the gods are, that is also a little sometimes not clear. And therefore, they would also be a different category. So there could be a lot of different categories. You could probably expand this like atheist. Like I think another type of atheist is an emotional atheist. I think most atheists are emotional atheists. They're not atheists because of philosophy. Like they're atheists because something terrible happened in their life, or because they came to a religion and they were let down by people. So they have like this kind of anger against God, and therefore they turn away from God and they become very angry and they're very eager to tell the world that God doesn't exist. Like someone like, for example, Richard Dawkins. Like, to me, Richard Dawkins is like a complete emotional atheist. Because like, you know, like he did these campaigns, you know, there's probably no God, just have a good time, the God delusion. He's like so enthusiastic to tell the world that God doesn't exist. But it's kind of like, if everything's matter, if there's no God, if we're just chemicals, we die at the end, life is meaningless, then why is it so important to you to tell the whole world that God doesn't exist? Because it's all meaningless anyway. If everything's matter, nothing matters, just relax, have a good time, and don't get uptight about anything. But he can't do that. He has to go out and tell the whole world that God doesn't exist, because clearly he has an emotional issue against God. So, yeah, so you could probably have more categories like emotional atheists, all these type of people, yeah. Thank you. Anyone else have any questions? Anything they'd like to ask or raise? By the way, how long am I supposed to go?
Till 8 or till 7 your time? Yeah, till 7 your time.
Okay. So if no one from the ISKCON Berlin Temple... Oh, so Natina has another question. Okay.
I have another one. Maybe you can mention, because now we speak about those who kind of are atheists and those who don't go to Krishna, but what about those who come to Krishna? There's four different kinds, right? Can you say something about them?
Yeah, so Krishna says in the Gita, Chatur Vida Bhajante Mam Jana Sukritina Arjuna Artha Jigyasa Arthaarthi Gyanicha Bharatar Shabha. So Krishna says the desirer of wealth, the distressed, the inquisitive, and the one searching for absolute, they come to me. So Prabhupada gives commentaries on this, and he obviously explains that in one sense, all of them are good. They're all pious, because some people want wealth, but they don't come to Krishna. They just try and make lots of money. Some people are distressed and it turns them away from Krishna, not to go to Krishna. So the fact that even they're going to Krishna means they have some sukriti, some piety, some spiritual spark within. When talking about desiring wealth, Prabhupada gives the example of Dhruva. And Dhruva wanted to have a kingdom greater than his great-grandfather. And finally, when he got it, he said to himself, like, I was searching for broken glass, actually. And now I found the Divya Ratnam, a transcendental gem, by getting Krishna's association. So he overcame his desire. When Prabhupada talks about distress, he talks about Gajendra, how Gajendra, the elephant, was in great distress. And in his past life, he was the king Indradyumna, and he offered the flower and prayer to the Lord when he was getting attacked by the crocodile, and praying only for protection in his distressful situation, but finally he got the darshan of the Lord and he became purified. Inquisitiveness, I guess the four Kumaras are talked about in that ultimately they were almost like inquisitive, and then finally they got association of the Lord. So yeah, we all come to Krishna consciousness with desires, with different desires. Most of us are not coming to the Krishna consciousness movement with a completely pure motivation. But devotional service is like a fire, and association of devotees is like a fire, that in that association, even though we're not completely pure and we don't have the totally right motivation, gradually it becomes refined over time. And so Prabhupada just focused on really doing whatever it took to keep devotees in the movement somehow or other. You know, like at 26 Second Avenue, the devotees would come for lectures, but then halfway through, they would go to the donut shop next door, you know, like when the philosophy was getting a bit heavy, you know, it was like, okay, time to get a donut, you know, like, and so Prabhupada saw that. So he thought, like, I got to keep them in here somehow. So then Prabhupada just like got a jar, and then he cooked like all these gulab jamuns, you know, the ISKCON bullets. And he just said, like, as many as you want, just take them, you know, stay in the temple somehow or other, stay in the Vaishnav Sangha, whatever it takes. So, we have to make the Vaishnav Sangha very, very warm and very, very caring. And probably what we have to do is care for each other on every level, because sometimes we just think, well, we're all here for Krishna consciousness, so we just give each other Krishna consciousness. And of course, that's the ultimate thing that we're here to give each other. But it's nice to give a bit of care, a bit of love, a bit of human kindness as well, because not everyone is transcendental enough to just want Krishna. Some people also just want a bit of human kindness as well. So we need that as well. So I guess when I read that verse, I kind of think to myself that whatever we come to Krishna for, by the association, it's all purified, and therefore we have to somehow try and stay in the association of devotees. So it's so unfortunate when someone leaves the association of devotees, isn't it? Like Prabhupada said, if you come to Krishna consciousness, you're fortunate. If you don't come to Krishna consciousness, you're unfortunate. But if you come to Krishna consciousness and then you leave, you're most unfortunate, because you got the chance. You're like right there. And then you left. That verse shows that we're most... And actually, Prabhupada said, in Kali Yuga, 99% of people come to Krishna consciousness because they're distressed. And that's a fact. So if people are coming because they're distressed, then we have to be like super alert to that. And that means like care and kindness and human sensitivity in our movement is so important. Because practically, according to Prabhupada's analysis, 99% of all of us are here because we're distressed. So we need a bit of heart in the movement, otherwise it's going to be difficult to hang around. And therefore, it is difficult to hang around. And Prabhupada therefore said, don't be surprised when someone leaves the Krishna consciousness movement. Be surprised if someone stays. And they once asked Jai Vaita Maharaj, he was giving a class, and one devotee said to him, Maharaj, we should write a book of stories about how all the devotees came to Krishna consciousness. It's like miraculous, isn't it? Like devotees have all these stories, how I came to Krishna consciousness. So the devotee said, Maharaj, we should write a book on how devotees came to Krishna consciousness. That would be miraculous. Maharaj said, we should write a book on how devotees stayed in Krishna consciousness. That would be more miraculous. Because it takes something to stay. But if we stay, we get purified. And then the initial material motivation why we came to this movement, that gradually disappears. And Krishna comes to the forefront. Sorry, that was a bit of a long-winded answer, but just some thoughts. Thank you.
May I ask?
Yes, please, Mataji.
On Tattva Darshina, how can we know when we have not seen the truth? How can we recognize the person who has? Like,
yeah, therefore, in the Shastra, what you'll find not in the Gita repeatedly and in many, many other books is that the qualities of a self-realized soul are given. So for example, take the first verse of the Nectar of Instruction. Vacho vegam, manasakrodha vegam, jiva vegam, mudarapasto vegam, etan vegan yo vishahe dhira, sarvam apimam vitivim shashishyat. Rupa Goswami says, if one has tolerated the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the forces of the anger, the urges of the tongue, belly and genitals, sarvam apimam pitivim shashishyat, then they're qualified to instruct and help people in the spiritual path. So there are like an external symptoms of someone who's clearly evolved in the spiritual path. These are all external things you can observe. Therefore, even Sanatan Goswami says, before one approaches a spiritual master, one should go through a period of testing whether they can put faith in that guru. And that period of observation is to see all of these things. Is this personality showing these qualities? However, you're right. Ultimately, our vision is not 100% pure, because we still have conditionings and anartas. Therefore, Gaur Govinda Maharaj, he would often say that ultimately only the holy name can reveal. And therefore, after doing all of our analysis of a personality, then we ultimately surrender to the holy name of Krishna. And the holy name actually is like the sun, which reveals the Vaishnavas that we can take shelter of in order to get further instruction in spiritual life. So finding a tattva darshi is a matter of, number one, understanding Shastra. Number two, doing some practical observation and inquiry. And number three, ultimately, a deep prayer to the holy name and a sincere request to Krishna to please reveal this very clearly to you. And generally, if we do those three things in all sincerity, then we'll be protected and Krishna will ultimately guide us. Because ultimately Krishna wants to guide us. Krishna wants us to come back to Godhead. Krishna wants us to fully awaken our original consciousness. So why won't Krishna help? Krishna will. But ye yatham mam prapadyante tamstateva bhajami aham. You have to surrender to Krishna, surrender to the process, and do it in all sincerity, and then Krishna will reward you accordingly. I don't know if that answers or whether you have some more in-depth thing you wanted to understand from that. Is that okay? All right. Thank
you. I have a
question.
So I think Tushta Krishna and then ISKCON Berlin Temple Room, like that. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Sutapa Prabhu. Thank you very much for the wonderful inspiration you are pouring out here. To that point of caring for devotees beyond their purely spiritual desires and needs. I really like that, what you said, and I think it's very important that we consider that in our dealings with devotees. And I would really love to hear some example from you where you felt that was really handled well, or maybe also some example where you felt it wasn't handled so well, so that we can grasp it a little bit better.
Yes, what I want to do is I'm going to, just give me 1 second. I'm just going to share my screen with you and I'm going to show you perhaps one of my most favorite pictures ever. Give me a second. Can you see this picture? This is one of my most favorite pictures ever. This is a picture of Srila Prabhupada in Butler, Pennsylvania. Prabhupada has just arrived in America and he's staying with the Agarwals. The Agarwals are like, they don't know, like they weren't even expecting that Prabhupada would come. They're like the all-American family. They didn't hear Prabhupada turned up. They were eating meat. They didn't know how to entertain a Swami. And Prabhupada was just living with them. If you get a chance, in Srila Prabhupada's biography, you can read the account of Sally Agarwal, who was Gopal Agarwal's wife, and her account of staying with Srila Prabhupada at that time. And if you see how she describes Srila Prabhupada, she says he was the most brilliant person ever. He was so kind. He was so caring. When he smiled, his smile was oceanic. He was the easiest person to live with. And she just says all of these things about his personality. And she said the day that he left my home to go to New York, we were like, we felt sick. We were almost crying. We were in tears. And if you read she wasn't actually conquered by the philosophy that Prabhupada gave her. She was actually just conquered by how amazing a person Srila Prabhupada was. Now, this picture is very amazing because this is the son of Sali Agarwal. His name was Bridge. So this picture was taken when Bridge walked for the first time. And Prabhupada saw Bridge walk for the first time. And when Prabhupada saw him walk, Prabhupada was like in ecstasy. So now you kind of think like, this is Srila Prabhupada. He's from the spiritual world. He's living with Krishna. This is just some kid who was like walking for the first time. Big deal. What's the big deal? It's just a kid walking for the first time. But look at how human Srila Prabhupada was. Look at how kind he was. Look at how relatable he was. Look at how he was so much merged in transcendental consciousness. And at the same time, he was so down to earth and relatable on a human level. Srila Prabhupada could live with anyone. I mean, Prabhupada went to the Bowery and he lived with drug addicts. This is a sadhu from Vrindavan who lived in India his whole life. Prabhupada was so human that he could relate to anyone. And so I really like this picture because it really says a lot about Krishna consciousness, that Krishna consciousness is not just about what you do, but it's about who you are as a person. It's not just about chanting many, many rounds and knowing many, many shlokas and being able to tell people many, many things, but it's who you are as a person. It's your kindness, it's your care, it's your love. It's the way you treat people on a human level that inspires them. And so I think maybe in the Krishna consciousness movement, we could improve on this, like our own human character. And sometimes I do a thought experiment. I ask myself, if I walked out into the world without tilak, without this dhoti on, without saying anything about Krishna, without my bead bag, and I was just dressed as a normal person, would people look at me and say, you know what, there's something different about that person? Would they recognize me as a devotee of Krishna because of my character, because of my qualities, because of my personality? Or am I recognized as a devotee of Krishna just because of my external markings? And I think that's the real challenge we have in the Krishna consciousness movement, not just to be a devotee in philosophy, a devotee in sadhana, a devotee in external practice, but a devotee in terms of kindness at heart. And if we're able to do both, that's incredible. Like the Goswamis, dhira dhira janapriyo priyakaro nirmatsaro pujito. Everyone loved the Goswamis. Like the Goswamis, just imagine. Raghunath Das, Rupa Goswami, he was doing like hundreds of thousands of names every day. How many obeisances? He was sleeping under a tree. He was hardly eating anything. He was sleeping for like 2 hours. Like, I mean, you can't get more renounced than that, more transcendental than that. But you know what Rupa Goswami would do? When he would go to the village, he would meet all the villagers and he would say, oh, and how's your son? And how's your daughter? Did she get married? And how's your father? How's his health? And you're thinking like, why is he concerned about all these things? Like, he's transcendental, right? But he was so human and people loved him and people loved the Goswamis because they were not just transcendental, but they were human as well. And in the great devotees, we find this combination. So I think that's important in the Krishna consciousness movement. Is that okay? Does that answer? I mean, we could talk so much more about this, but yeah.
It's very nice. Thank you.
We have a question here from the live audience in Berlin. And before we hear Shumit say something. Thank you for sharing that wonderful picture. That was some successful bridge preaching, obviously. I just Googled his name and I saw that he and his father visited the ISKCON temple in Juhu some, I don't know when, but obviously it has left some impression on them and they have come to the temple. So now Shumit will ask the question.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, please.
Hare Krishna.
Accept my humble obeisances. I am right now in a contradictory situation. Let's say, as you have mentioned, that those people who were in Krishna consciousness and then left the movement or go away and have some distance from Krishna consciousness, they are the most unfortunate. I feel like I am one of them. So the thing was like, in my young age, I was near and dear to the devotees, and then I were so much distance from the devotees, and I left the movement somehow, and then right now I am trying to re-entry, I can say, in the movement. And the thing is, previously what happened and now what I am trying, the thing is I am trying to realize more and reflect more on myself. The contradiction I want to share, that I don't know how fast I should move forward to take all of these vows, let's say offering prasadam in my home, offering bhoga to Lord in my home, and then having those kind of prasadam. These kind of vows are right now, I'm not that much firm, decided that what should I do, what I shouldn't do. But right now, yeah, I am in jeopardy. So my question is, how can I realize, and then how can I understand that what steps should I take, and how fast should I move to re-entry in Krishna consciousness or taking all of these vows? Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. If you want to develop muscles, I can see you have a lot of muscles already, but if you want to develop more muscles, should I say, then you need to go to the gym. And in the gym, generally, you are not training alone. There is a trainer. Because you see, like if I say, oh, I want to build muscles, and then I'm just lifting this pen all day long. Oh, I did 100, you know. Yeah, but you're just lifting a pen. So what muscle are you going to develop? At the same time, if I go in the gym and try to lift the heaviest thing, I'll kill myself. In other words, Krishna consciousness and advancing in Krishna consciousness means to bend yourself without breaking yourself. So in order to know how much, you need help. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is never practiced in isolation. So the first thing is you must have some friends. There's so many smiling faces there. I'm sure many of them are your friends. And many of them you have to discuss with and ask them, what's my next step? What's my next commitment? What's the next vow? You see, you make many, many small vows in your life. And gradually it leads to a big change. So you say, like, from tomorrow, I offer at least one meal every day properly. And you just do that, and whatever vow you do, you take it and you maintain it and you make it part of you. And then once it's part of you, you don't need to think about it anymore. Then you make another vow. Then you make another vow. Then it becomes you're naturally advancing in Krishna consciousness. And like this, when you make many, many small vows and commitments, then you'll find after some time, Krishna has taken over your whole life. Like, it's like you take first initiation and then you have to chant 16 rounds. Of course, you're already chanting 16 rounds before, but okay, now 16 rounds is a vow. And then you take Brahmin initiation. Then you have to do 3 Gayatri mantras. It's like at every moment of the day, there's something to do that you've vowed, you know. There's like no space for Maya anymore. And that's how Krishna works, but it's done in a very natural way. So what you have to do is make many small vows. You see, like if you have a pond, yeah, and you throw one pebble in the pond, and then you throw another pebble, another pebble, another pebble, another pebble. Gradually, there's so many pebbles of spiritual commitment in that pond that later on, if one pebble of like material desire comes and you try and throw it on the pond of your consciousness, because there's so many spiritual pebbles in there, it hits the pebble and it comes out. And it can't stay there. So the pond is like your consciousness. And the small pebbles that you're throwing in are like your spiritual commitments. And when you make more and more small commitments, then gradually your consciousness becomes very, very strong. And then if any thought of material things comes, it just gets deflected because your spiritual strength has come. So in essence, what I'm saying is, number one, get help. Always do it with someone. That's number one. And number two, don't think about making an overnight change. Many, many small changes will create a big change. So just focus on progress rather than perfection. Okay? Always remember, progress more important than perfection. Because if you try for perfection straight away, you may not be able to sustain it, then you'll become discouraged. So therefore, just every day be progressing. And then perfection is just a matter of time. Like that. So yeah, there are many, many more. We could do a whole seminar on vows and commitments, and that's another time. Thank you very much. So I guess we finish up there. It's past 8 o'clock for all of you. So.
Okay, thank you very much, Sutta.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you, everyone, for coming. Nice to see everyone. Jaina Thakur, nice to see you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna.
See you soon.
Hare Krishna.